Hi, my name's Nick Smith, founder and creator of Part-Time Pilot. Now, after 3 years, five flight instructors, and over $22,000 out of my bank account, I was finally able to achieve my dream and become a private pilot. Now, I have a bachelor's and master's in aerospace engineering and over 10 years experience as a flight test engineer. So if it was that difficult for someone like me, no wonder 8 out of 10 student pilots never end up becoming a pilot. So this is why I created Part-Time Pilot, and this is why I'm creating this podcast. This podcast will be your audio ground school and just another way Part-Time Pilot is making flight training easier and more consumable for you. So with over 300 students and counting that have used our content to pass the FAA private pilot exams, I hope that you can use this podcast to become the next student to do so. So thank you, and I hope you enjoy listening to the Part-Time Pilot Audio Ground School Podcast. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Audio Ground School Podcast. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, I don't know what that was or what kind of mood I am in today, but it is a great day. Hopefully you're having a great day as well. In today's episode, we are going to start the very last section of our online ground school. So as you know, if you're listening, if this is the first time you're listening, this is the podcast where we go through every single lesson of the Part-Time Pilot Online Ground School for you to listen in a podcast on the go wherever you are. So it's been a huge success. I'm super proud of the podcast, and thank you everyone who is listening. We're finally on the last section. It's going to be about 90 episodes or so to get through the entire ground school. Now, we've done some bonus episodes here or there, so it hasn't been all lessons, but just about, you know, 80 to 90 episodes of content. That's a lot. So I want you guys to realize that, take a step back and realize how much knowledge you are having to consume when you go through. I know it can get overwhelming, but I want you to have that expectation and that perspective that it is a lot. Okay. So if you have the expectations, it's going to be a lot. You know, maybe it won't be as much of overwhelm, right? And you can just, if you take it one day at a time, one episode of the podcast at a time, before you know it, you'll have it all done. And so now that the podcast is complete, you can listen to, you know, one episode every day while you're driving to work, while you're working out. And, you know, 80 days later, that's not too long. That's 2 to 3 months. You're done with, you've consumed all the content and you're ready to go. So not too bad, but keep it in perspective. It is a lot. When you finally do finish it, give yourself a pat on the back, because pretty cool that you took the time to learn all this stuff and make yourself a better, competent pilot. And that's what we try to do at Part-Time Pilot. All right. So like I said, we're into the last section on night operations. This is in the online ground school at parttimepilot.com. If you want to come join us, highly recommend. Each lesson has not only this audio without all this mumbo jumbo that I'm saying right now and any ads that we do. So it's just the lessons at the top of the written lesson, then it has visual aids in there, and then it also has some videos, quizzes, and then once you get through all those lessons, then we do practice tests and work with you one-on-one with a practice test report, pair you for the FAA written, and yeah, it's been really successful. So anyways, come join us at parttimepilot.com so you can get the full experience. Also on each and every lesson is an AI chatbot that I took like 3 or 4 months training this AI chatbot. I'm really hyped up about AI and how it can help people learn things. So if you were to just go to ChatGPT, you know, that's getting better every day. But even still now, if you were to go ask it any question about pilot training, it's going to need context, right? So it might think, if you talk about stall, it might think you're talking about, you know, a stall for horses or something like that. So then you have to provide context. Okay, that's easy enough. But then it tries to basically make everyone happy with its answers. And as you know, everyone in society wants different things in different answers. So it tries to make everyone happy. And in doing that, it can lead you astray on some things. So our AI chatbot is completely trained on what to give answers that the FAA would want to hear, right? So, and it, no context needed, all that stuff. That's on each and every lesson. So if you have a quick question, need to clarify something, boom, ask our AI right there. And we're the only one that I know of that is doing that and has trained, taking the time to train an AI like that. So that's really cool. But with that said, it does not take the place of talking to moi or, the instructors that we employ to help you guys. and get your questions answered. So you can always reach out to us, and we pride ourselves in getting back to you within the hour and not stopping until you are satisfied with and you understand the question that you're asking. So we also have a Facebook study group where you can ask questions there. So the AI is not meant to take our place. It's just meant as an added tool. All right. So with all that said, let's get to our first couple segments of the podcast that we've been doing, right? So we have a listener question, and then we have read off a couple reviews. Let's start with the listener question. All right. Now, this is kind of not one particular listener, but it's a question that I get a lot that we've done an episode on. I've done videos on. We even have a free course on. So it's out there. We've talked about it before, but I don't know if I've ever done it in a succinct, you know, 3-4 minute spiel on the podcast. And that is the question of how do I become a pilot? And now I know that you guys, if you're here with us on this episode, you already kind of know how to get started. You may just be following what your flight school tells you. And it's good to educate yourself on the steps needed and the different options that you have for flight training. So the first thing you want to decide is whether or not what you want to become a pilot for. Do you want to become a pilot just to fly for fun as a hobby, right? And if so, do you want to be able to fly passengers? If so, how many passengers do you want to be able to fly with? Do you want to be able to fly in poor weather conditions, bad visibility? Or do you just want to be able to fly by yourself in good weather conditions? Or fly by yourself in bad weather conditions? Those are the type of things you have to decide first. And then on the flip side, do you want to fly as a living, right? Do you eventually want to become a pilot for hire where you can take passengers and get paid to do that, right? We're talking, you know, that whether that's a private, you know, private aircraft companies, you know, where you fly people privately or you fly people commercially for airlines. That's the first thing you have to decide. Now, if you can't decide now, don't worry. There's routes to go that leaves your options open. And that first route is becoming a private pilot. That's why private pilot license is the most common license out there. If you want to continue on to fly as a career, you can do that from a pilot. That's the first step, right? The first step to fly as a career is to get your private pilot's license. So that will allow you to do that. It'll also allow you to just stay as a private pilot and fly in VFR, which is, as you know, visibility condition, you know, good weather conditions, essentially, and take passengers, right? You can take a few passengers and as long as you're current and you can fly in good weather as a private pilot. So that's why, you know, private pilot is the most common one. Now, if you already know, you're like, you know what? I don't want to fly as, I don't really care for passengers. I don't want to fly as a career. Then you might want to become a sport pilot. And one advantage of becoming a sport pilot is you don't have to pass a third class medical certificate. So those who have the dream of flying, but don't want to become but think they might not, you know, maybe you have a medical condition that may not pass a third class medical examination by the FAA, then you can become a sport pilot. And it has limitations such as, you know, carrying passengers and where you can fly and type of aircraft you can fly, you know, smaller aircraft and stuff like that. But that might be something that you want to do. And for a sport pilot, it's the same process. You got to take a written exam. You got to take a check ride, all that stuff. It's like 95% the same as a private pilot. So again, that's why people just get a private pilot's license. You still have to learn 95% of the ground school. That's why you don't see sport pilot ground schools for sale out there, right? Because 95% the same as private pilot. And we have had a bunch, you know, people ask us all the time, hey, I don't want to pass a third class medical. I want to be a sport pilot. Can you do that? And I'm like, yep. You just go through our ground school. We give you a piece of paper with the differences. We give you some sport pilot specific written questions to supplement our private pilot practice test, and then we give you an endorsement for the sport pilot written test. And we've probably done about 50 or 60 people like that, and every single one of them has passed with flying colors using our private pilot. So it just goes to show that it's mostly 95% the same. So unless you're worried about passing that medical exam, go for a private pilot. It's the same amount of work pretty much anyways. All right. So once you've kind of determined that, let's say you want to become a private pilot, right? Because you may want to fly as a career, or you may want to take passengers, or it just makes sense. So you're not worried about failing a medical exam. So you become a private pilot. All right. So then let's say you want to fly in more weather conditions. You know, you think that would be either fun, or let's say your hobby flying is being limited by VFR flight. So you can get an IFR rating, right? So it's an additional ground school, which By the way, we released our beta. We're releasing our IFR ground school soon. Additional ground school, additional practice time and flight lessons with an instructor, and then an additional check ride. Same process as a private pilot, a little bit less hours and time needed to become IFR, but it's pretty close. I would say about 80%, 70 to 80% of the required. But obviously, it goes quicker for a lot of people, especially if they do it right after private pilot, because all the pilot knowledge is fresh in your brain, right? All the knowledge and the skill is fresh in your brain. So becoming IFR, that next step, is usually a lot quicker for people. But there still is a lot more new knowledge and skills to learn. All right, then let's say you decide you do want to make it a career. Well, okay, so then the next step would become getting a commercial pilot's license and then what we call an airline transport certificate. So commercial pilot's certificate will allow you to fly for hire, but if you want to fly for the airlines, you got to get, that's called ATP, airline transport pilot. So that's kind of the steps you would have to go. Now, I want to talk about the different options you have to complete these steps. Now, there's a way to do it piece by piece, and then there's a way to do it in an accelerated kind of full-time environment. Usually we call these accelerated flight schools. So let's start with the accelerated flight school. Let's say I only recommend these if you know exactly you want to become an airline pilot, because they're going to take you from zero to ATP, right, with one kind of tuition, and they're going to require that you be there full-time. So you want to think of this as like full-time school, almost as if you're getting a degree. And sometimes these programs are included with a degree program. So anyways, you're going to pay something between $80,000 to $120,000. That's a lot of money, so a lot of people might not be able to do this. But you're going to do that, and then you're going to be full-time, like every day, all day, every day, studying, flying. But it's going to progress you through your private pilot, then your IFR, then your commercial, you know, and then your time building, where you have to, certificate has a certain amount of hours needed, right? Private pilot, it's like 40 hours, and then, you know, IFR has a requirement, commercial has a requirement, and then to be ATP, it has a very big, big requirement that you need to meet there. So you get all your certificates, you build hours, and then you got to get hired by an airline after that. And that's usually like a full-time thing, takes about a year or 2 years going through that full-time, paying that $80,000 to $120,000. That's one option, right? So if you have the money, you know you want to be an airline pilot, and you want to do it as quick as possible, that's what I recommend. Now, on the flip side, if you maybe don't have the money, maybe you don't have, you know, 10 hours a day to dedicate to this stuff, maybe you're not sure you want to be any single one of those, then a piecemeal type approach to it might be better. Now, there is no one out there saying that you can't get it done as quickly as an ATP doing it the piecemeal way. It still is up to you how much you can dedicate. If you can dedicate a lot of time getting these ratings one by one and not going to an accelerated school, but you do them quickly and in the right situation, you can still get them done, all this stuff done very quickly in 1 to 2 years. And it's usually when you do it piece by piece, the reason it's more popular is it can save money. So in this situation, what you would do is you would get a private pilot license, right? You'd find a flight school, flying club, something like that. And you'd get a private pilot, then you'd get an instrument, and then you'd get a commercial, and then you'd get an instructor rating. And then to be an instructor, then you teach student pilots while building those hours needed for your ATP to apply for the airlines. So that big amount of hour building that costs a lot of money can be supplemented or subsidized by you being a flight instructor, and it can save you a lot of money if you're willing to teach student pilots. So that's why you see a lot of flight instructors, right? They end up going, stop flight instructing and going off to the airlines. So it's very, very helpful that we can do this, but also at the same time kind of can hurt students when they have flight instructors that continuously jump to the airline. Now, I think it's a great thing if flight schools were better at ensuring that their students had, you know, would have the, they lined up the flight instructor's schedule with the student's schedule so that students could maintain the same flight instructor, right? So if they have a flight instructor that's just about to leave, if they did a better job at putting that, you know, with a student who's maybe almost done, just transferred to that flight school, or you know, if a student has, you know, already gone through two flight instructors because they both jumped to the airlines, maybe they stop there and they make sure they have an instructor that's going to stay with them so that you're not going through four or five instructors like I did, which can get really frustrating and difficult. Anyways, I digress. Those are the kind of options you can do it the piecemeal way. Maybe, you know, you have more flexibility with your time, save some money by becoming a flight instructor, and you can always change your mind, or you can do it the accelerated way. So that's kind of my spiel. Took a little bit longer than 3 to 4 minutes. But for those out there that are wondering, you know, what my next steps be while you're becoming a private pilot, those are the steps. So let's move on to read off a couple reviews today, and then we'll get into lessons. So real quick, we got a review from Don 5 stars. Awesome, in all caps. I've been learning so much through the teachings. Definitely my style of learning. Easy to follow and very user-friendly. Appreciate that, Don. Thank you so much for the review and for being in our program. Next one is 5 stars from Vivian. Easy to understand. The material is well laid out and easy to understand. I love the variety in study aids. And we'll read one more. Cade, 5 stars. Part-time pilot, accessible ground training. Part-time pilot is an excellent source of information with many different approaches to help assimilate what you're learning. All those were short and sweet, and I highly appreciate those. Those reviews came from TrustPilot.com. You can review us there about our ground schools or about this podcast, and we would highly, highly appreciate that. If the platform that you're listening to this podcast on allows you to reviews like Apple Podcasts does, please do me a favor, leave us a review there because it really, really helps us out. All right, so thank you, Cade. Thank you, Vivian, and thank you, Don, for those reviews. All right, so that's it. Let's get into today's lessons. So we're in section 18 of course titled Step 1 Private Pilot Ground School Lessons. So we organize everything by courses. So we have a step 1. That's all our lessons and quizzes. Then step 2 is practice tests. Once you finish step 2, we get a notification and we build a customized report of your practice test, send that report to you, and say, here are the next steps for your endorsement. Sometimes, a lot of times, students are ready for their endorsement, so we'll give them an endorsement. We'll also give them more practice tests that they can study up as they wish before their test. And then sometimes students need a little bit more work and we'll work with them one-on-one to kind of find the gaps in their knowledge while giving them more practice tests. And it usually takes, when it's like that, it usually just takes a few more iterations of, you know, doing a practice test, asking us questions, making sure you understand why you got it wrong. A few more iterations like that, then you're good to go and pass the written exam. And this process has allowed us to have a 99.9% success rate in students passing their exam. And it also allows us to make the best and most competent student pilots out there that are ready for their flight lessons. So that's how we organize our course. And in step 1 is all the lessons, and that's where we're at today. So if you're following along, go to step 1 course. Go to section 18 on night operations, and then we're going to start off on lesson 1 on night definitions. We'll probably get to lesson 2 on vision and lesson 3 on illusions. Now remember, these are all specific to night. So when I say vision, I mean night vision. When I say illusions, I mean illusions during the night, right? So let's start with lesson 1, section 18 on night definitions. The airplane could care less that you are flying at night. It performs and handles the same as in the day. The differences of night operations are felt by the pilot, not the airplane. There are physical limitations as well as changes to requirements and procedures while at night. Because of this, the FAA has different rules and currency requirements for night operations. This definition of night changes depending on what regulations you are considering. Why this occurs, why they have different definitions on when exactly is night, depending on what regulation you're talking about, I have no idea. If anyone out there knows why, or if there's any rhyme or reason for why the FAA does this other than just completely confuse people trying to learn it, please reach out and let us know. But what I'm trying to say is, whether you're talking about when you need to have position lights turned on, or when your aircraft needs to be equipped with the required night equipment. Remember our acronym, our mnemonic device FLAPS for the required night equipment. Whether it's talking about that, or whether it's talking about you want to log nighttime for your training, or whether you're talking about you want to get currency to carry passengers at night. All those things have different definitions of what night actually is. So that's what I want to talk about here. I know it's confusing, it sucks, but try to break it down really simply. And we even have a diagram that shows you what these kind of, based off where the sun is and where the horizon is, what these different definitions mean and which requirements or regulations apply to them. So Let's break it down. In terms of when position lights are required to be on, in this situation, the definition of night is simply sunset to sunrise. So whatever the posted sunset sunrise is by the, I don't know who posts that, the National Weather Service or something like that. As soon as the sun starts setting and as soon as the sun starts rising, between that time, between sunset and sunrise, that's when position lights must be turned on. All right, so that's the first definition, sunset to sunrise. The next definition is going to be for, in terms of currency requirements to carry passengers at night. So if you want to carry passengers at night, you have to be current in your night landings. So to do that, and this is FAR 6157, recent flight experience for pilot in command at night, the definition of night is different than sunset to sunrise. The definition of night is now between 1 hour after sunset and 1 hour before sunrise. So where before we have to have position lights as soon as sunset starts until sunrise begins, but to get flight experience to be able to be current to carry passengers, you have to wait till 1 hour after sunset to get that currency. If you're trying to get your night landings to be current at night and sunset is at 6 p.m., you would have to wait to do your landings till 7 p.m., till after 7 p.m. to be able to have those landings count towards your night currency to carry passengers. And then it goes from 1 hour after sunset to 1 hour before sunrise. So if sunrise is at 5 a.m., 4 a.m., whatever, then 1 hour before that would be when the time ends. So it shortens the amount of time that you have to do that. And I think to be able to carry passengers, they want you to be a little safer. So they want to make sure really you have, you're practicing in true night where there's not any residual twilight or light coming and it's truly dark and night operations. So I think that's why they do that. But that's the second definition of night. So it's 1 hour after sunset to 1 hour before sunrise. And that, again, is for currency requirements to carry passengers. So the third definition of night is for, in terms of logging night flight and currency aircraft equipment for night, which, again, is the mnemonic device flaps. So your aircraft has to be equipped with that equipment for night between the end of civil evening twilight and the beginning of civil morning twilight. We'll talk about what that is here in a second. So that's the third definition. Between the end of civil evening twilight and the beginning of civil morning twilight is the third definition of night. And that's for when you have to have the required equipment on your aircraft for night and when you can log time, hours, in your logbook and consider them night. So that's different than landings for currency. It's hours. For, you know, to become a private pilot, you have to have a certain number of hours of night at night. So that would be this definition, which is between the end of evening twilight and the beginning of morning twilight. Now, why the logging of night flight is not the same as currency passengers, I don't know. Why the equipment is different than when position lights have to be on, I don't know either. So what is twilight in the morning and twilight in the evening? Well, so civil twilight in the evening is when the center of the sun reaches 6 degrees below the horizon while falling. So our sun is falling below the horizon. Once it's 6 degrees below the center of the sun, the geometric center of the sun, 6 degrees below that horizon, that's when we call civil twilight in the evening. And twilight is the first specks of light that are seen. That's the definition of, I think that's like twi means the first. So twilight's the first lights, or in the case of the evening, it would be the last lights. So they're saying that the last lights from the sun are shown on Earth when it's 6 degrees, when the center is 6 degrees below the horizon. So then on the flip side, the morning civil twilight would be when the geometric center of the sun reaches, again, 6 degrees below the horizon. But this time the sun is, you know, it looks like it's rising above the horizon, right? So 6 degrees below the horizon for both, but in the morning, the sun's rising, right? In the evening, it's lowering. But when it's 6 degrees below the horizon in the morning, that's when we get the twilight, the first light starts to show. So between those two times, when the sun is, the two times of the day where the sun is 6 degrees below the horizon, between those two moments, that is the third definition of night that we're talking about, when we can log night flight hours and when we have to have our aircraft equipped for night flight. Yeah, so you guys got that all right. That's easy peasy. Oh, man. Yeah, this is a frustrating part of the FARs for sure. But Wanted to go over that. Now, we've talked about those individually when we've talked about things like logging flight time or currency requirements or required equipment, but wanted to revisit that and just kind of give you, now that we're in our section on night operations, revisit all those together to see the differences of those definitions. Okay, let's move on to lesson two of the section, and we're going to talk about night vision. Part of night preparation is a knowledge of the limitations to your vision that flying in the night brings. There are specific techniques to using your eyes at night that can improve night vision greatly. The human body uses eyes differently during night than it does during the day. Light-sensitive nerves, called cones and rods, are located at the back of the retina. These cones, located in the center of the retina, and rods, located in a circle around the retina, connect to the cells of the optic nerve, which transmit data directly to the brain. So these are kind of the basic components of the eyeball. You don't have to become an expert or anything and remember any of this, but it's good background for what I'm about to say. During the dark of night, night vision is left completely up to the rods surrounding the retina. So you have the cones in the center, you have the rods around it, and at night, the rods are doing the work. Okay, and that's something to remember that you might see on an exam or something. Peripheral vision is mostly conducted by these rods. Because of this, so at night, the rods do, their job is peripheral vision. And at night, the rods are doing all the work, okay? Just think of it like you got the cones that do vision right in front, like straight line vision. You got the rods, their job is peripheral vision, okay? But when it comes night, the cones clock out. They're like, I'm going home. Screw this, I don't get paid enough for this, right? So the rods are left to do everything. They got to do night vision, but they're so used to doing peripheral vision, okay? So that's still their main job. That's what they've been trained to do. So peripheral vision is mostly conducted by the rods, and because of this, looking at objects off-center is the preferred method at night. So if you look at an object a little bit off-center at night, you'll be able to see it better, and that's because your rods are the ones that are still there, the cones. Checked out for the day. They're at home, on the sofa. All right, so in other words, during the day, the best way to see something is to look directly at the center of it. But during the night, the best way to see something is to the side of it and have your peripheral or rods focus on the object. At night, there is a blind spot at the center of your eye. Again, the cones are nowhere to be seen, right? So pilots use a scanning technique that consists of slow, gradual eye movements from left to right to allow for the off-center viewing in order to scan the observable area out of the cockpit window. So, I want to mention that again. This might be something that you want to remember. Pilots use a scanning technique that consists of slow, gradual eye movements from left to right to allow for off-center viewing to scan the observable area. So you want your, if you just look straight ahead the whole time, your rods are looking at the peripherals, they're not going to be able to see the whole thing. So you want to move them slowly left to right, allow your rods to be able to scan the entire area. And if you spot something, then focus on it a little bit off center to use your rods. That's how, those are tricks, using our anatomy that are well known on top of the FAA for pilots to see things at night. This technique is the most effective way to use your eyes at night because it allows the rods of your eyes, which work better at night, to have a full panorama of vision and therefore give you a full panorama of visibility. And here in the ground school, we have a visual depiction of this taken from the FAA. It shows, just kind of depicts what this looks like, spotting traffic during the day, and then spotting traffic at night, how you would want to see that and where the blind spot would be. Another consideration for night vision is the eye's ability to adapt to a dark scene and vice versa, to a light scene. It takes the eyes about 10 minutes to start to adapt to a dark scene and about 30 minutes to be completely adapted. So what I'm trying to say here is, let's say you're in your flight club, right? Your flight school. You're going over a flight lesson on a white piece of paper with white lights in the flying school. And then you go out the back and it's pitch dark, right? Because you're doing a night flight. And you're going to notice that it's kind of hard to see stuff, right? Your eyes, you can see like bright white spots in your eyes. You can almost see the like hologram or like projection of the VFR charts you were just looking at in your eyeball. This is what we're talking about here. It's going to take 10 minutes to just start to adapt before, when you start to improve and you stop seeing, those white pieces of paper in your mind or in your eye, right? So 10 minutes just to start getting rid of that those remnants, and then about 30 minutes to be completely adapted. On the other hand, it takes the eyes only a couple of minutes to adapt to a light scene. So if you're in, you know, pitch dark, again, you can test this. Pitch dark, put a blindfold on, and then pull it off instantly, right? You're kind of going to squint because it kind of hurts your eyes, the light, but it's only going to take a few moments before you can look around. So the eyes adjust much more quickly, you know, in the reverse. Again, like I said, you practice this. Turn off the lights and notice your ability to see objects in the room. Wait 30 minutes and notice how your eyes will be able to gradually pick up more and more objects. So have the lights full blast, turn them all off, block the windows out, and then kind of time, like how long it takes you, like what objects you start to pick up, you know, around you, and how that over time increases. All right, so because of this behavior, it is important for pilots to first adapt themselves to the night. Okay, so how do we as pilots want to avoid that, right? We talked about you're going over your flight plan in the bright white lights, and then you go outside. We obviously don't want to take off right away while our eyes are still kind of night blinded, right? So we want to adapt to the night for 30 minutes. So we want to be out there, you know, it's good that we're doing our pre-flight check. Maybe we even sit in the cockpit for a little while, stretch our legs, check things, you know, even more on the aircraft at night, things like that to make sure we have our eyes are adjusted before we turn on the engine and start moving that aircraft. But then we want to make sure that we keep our eyes adapted. And to stay adapted, we want to basically avoid any more bright white lights. So if we have a flashlight, that's a bright white light, especially if the aircraft is white and we're doing our pre-flight check with a bright white light on the aircraft. Those lights are bouncing off of us. That's not really preparing our eyes, right? We're not keeping them adapted to the night. We're kind of ruining that. If we're in the cockpit on taxi and we're using a bright white flashlight or white lights in the cabin to look at our charts or our checklist, that again is not being adapted. So you want to avoid looking into bright white lights or lights on white light colored pieces of paper that'll shine brightly back at you. So this is the reason that you'll see specific flashlights just for pilots that have red or blue light settings. So you want to use red or blue lights at night in the cabin or during your pre-flight. If you're using red or blue lights and you really can't see something during your pre-flight, then sure, use the white light, but be cognizant that you need 30 minutes to kind of adjust your eyes after that. But in the cockpit, definitely use red or blue lights in the cabin to see your charts and instruments and checklists, because the eyes will stay adapted for night and not be disoriented by a white light. Also, if you have an iPhone, I don't know about Android, I have an iPhone, but if you triple click, so click it three times really fast, your power button, it will turn your phone red light. So if you want to use your phone or your iPad or something like that, you can also dim it, but that is helpful at night as well. Helps you see at night and not blind. Okay, I just did it to my phone, but now I don't know how to undo it. It usually undoes it if you do three, but for some reason mine's not working. All right, so to summarize, a bright white light at night can cause minutes of temporary blindness, which in a pilot's frame of time is a very long time to not be able to see anything. A pilot must keep these things in mind when flying at night. Did you know that Part-Time Pilot's Ultimate Private Pilot Test Prep book just won a Pulitzer Prize? Okay, no, it didn't win a Pulitzer Prize, but it was just updated for the recent changes we saw made to the FAA written exam. So now the book has everything that our ground school has and the same questions and test bank that our ground school has that students are averaging over 90% on the FAA written exam. It's now up on Amazon, and you can find it in our show notes on every episode. So go ahead and check that out. Okay, the last lesson that I want to talk about in today's episode is lesson 3 of section 18 on night illusions. Now, we'll go in more depth. If you continue on to IFR, you're going to go more in depth on illusions. It's important. Illusions are very important on private pilot, but for some reason, the FAA doesn't seem to test as much on them. They might on your check ride, so it's good to know these things, but usually more in depth on illusions because you're flying a low visibility in IFR. That's usually where, you know, training and ground school dives deeper on that stuff. But we, again, because we're an all-encompassing comprehensive ground school, we're going to cover it. So there are several illusions that can affect a pilot's vision and brain while flying, specifically at night. And those are distant lights on a clear night can be mistaken for other aircraft. So you're up there flying around, you see light really far away such that it doesn't look like it's on the ground. It can be confused for other aircraft. Sloping cloud layers or ground terrain can give the sense of a false horizon, right? So if you have sloping clouds, you know, over a city, top of the clouds can kind of be illuminated and can kind of look like that's the horizon when it's really above the horizon, right? On very dark nights, the horizon can become completely invisible. So if it's just pitch black, you can lose the horizon, and this can be tough if you're not used to, you know, flying by instruments, which you should be, and you should practice doing that in case this happens or in case you fly in low visibility. But yep, that's one of them. Then a stationary light can seem to be moving. This is called autokinesis, if stared at for too long. So you can think that that light's moving, maybe it's traffic or something, when in reality it's just something that's not moving and you are the one that's moving. Flickering lights in the cabin or on the wing can cause flicker vertigo, which causes nausea, headaches, and even unconsciousness, believe it or not. So that's another one to look out for. If you're feeling a little sick and maybe there's not turbulence or, you know, I would check carbon monoxide poisoning. I would check to see what altitude you have. Maybe it's hypoxia. And then if it's none of those and you don't have turbulence, not making your stomach queasy or anything, then maybe if you're flying at night and you have flickering lights on, maybe see what happens if you turn those off, because that could be flicker vertigo. And then finally, bright runway and airport lighting surrounding a dark terrain will create an illusion that the runway seeming closer than it actually is. In other words, you'll be lower than you think you are, and this is called a black hole approach. So let's say you're approaching a bright runway and airport lighting surrounded by dark terrain. So everything is dark. It's like a black hole, but all you see is the lighted up bright airport. It creates the illusion of the runway seeming closer than it actually is. But so you think it's closer than it actually is. So you think you're lower than you actually are, right? And that's a black hole approach. Avoiding these illusions is not always possible, but to minimize their effects, a pilot should continuously use their night vision scanning techniques, avoid staring at a light for too long, and rely more heavily on instruments than vision. Use glide slope lighting systems on landing and avoid consistent flickering lights in your plane of view. A VFR approach to land at night should be accomplished as the same as it is during the daytime. That means using the same airspeeds, pattern techniques, glide slope indicators, flare timing, and other landing procedures. So a lot of people think that at night, for some reason, a lot of pilots, it's nighttime, so they change things up, or because of these optical illusions, they do things differently. But the procedure to land, to approach and land, should be done the exact same. If you do it the exact same as during the day, you're going to have no problem. That's one thing I want you guys to remember out of this lesson here, is that landings at night should be done the same as they are during the day for VFR. Okay, so that's it on illusions. We are done with that lesson, and we are done with today's episode. Bit of a longer one, I think, but thank you for joining me on this episode. And we have three more lessons to go. We have one on night equipment that we'll kind of review that the night equipment. We'll have one on airport obstruction and navigation lighting aids. And then we'll talk about the last, but certainly not the least, lesson on traffic at night, how to spot traffic at night and all that stuff. So thank you guys. Probably one more episode to finish off the Private Pilot Online Ground School by Part-Time Pilot. So thank you guys for being with me on this journey. Yeah, we will continue this podcast. But until next week, I'll talk to you then. Hey guys, it's Nick. I want to take a second to speak directly to the student pilots out there. You might be a student pilot that is, you know, wondering what to do next, how to get started, or maybe you're looking for the right ground training or flight training, or maybe you've already started ground training or flight training and you're stuck, you're in a rut, and you're looking for a change, something to help get you out of that hurdle. From my own experience in flight training, after 3 years, 5 instructors, and $22,000, and wanting to quit multiple times, and then now, after seeing hundreds and hundreds of student pilots through Part-Time Pilot, I've realized that the number one thing that makes student pilots fail is that they do not have a good fundamental understanding of the ground training when they get to the more advanced flight lessons. Now, who here has seen Top Gun Maverick? Do you remember in the movie when he says, "Don't think, just do"? Now, when I heard this, I was like, oh my goodness, this is brilliant, because this is exactly what you have to be as a pilot. Now, of course, it's not that we're not thinking, but it's that we understand things like weather, aerodynamics, what our instruments are telling us, what ATC is telling us. We have such a good core fundamental understanding of these things that we don't have to think about them. And when we don't have to think about them, we can instinctively feel and fly the aircraft, look out for dangers, and avoid emergency situations. If we do have to think about these things, it's going to put us behind mentally, and we're going to be behind the aircraft. And when you're behind the aircraft mentally, bad things happen. And this happens when you don't have a good understanding of the ground school content. So now the first 10 to 15 hours of your flight training can go smooth, even if you don't have a good understanding of ground training, right? You can go up for a discovery flight, have a blast. You can go up, learn how to take off, learn how to land. You may be even able to solo for the first time, fly a plane for the first time. Everything's great and dandy. But once you get into, you know, bad weather flying or flying at heavily trafficked airports or speaking with ATC for Bravo clearance or cross-country flight planning and flying solo on a cross-country flight, things get a little more advanced. And when this happens and you don't have a good understanding of the ground school concepts, you're gonna hit a wall. You're gonna start to get behind the aircraft. And when this happens, if you have a good flight instructor, they're going to stop you and they're going to say, okay, we need to do one-on-one ground lessons. And now you're going to be paying your flight instructor to not even fly with you, but instead $50, $60, $70 an hour to just teach you the ground school content that you should already know. And the worst part is you're not flying with them. So the flight training that you gained, the currency, the proficiency that you gained is going to be lost, and you're going to have to redo those lessons. What happens to most student pilots is they continuously hit these mental blocks where they get behind the aircraft, they start making mistakes, and then they catch up with the ground knowledge only to have that happen again. And they start to get in this vicious cycle of having to redo trainings and repay for trainings until it gets to the point where them or their family, they finally say, you know what, this has to stop. We can no longer afford the training costs without any progress, you know, and they end up quitting. Now, so how do we avoid that? Well, here comes part-time pilot. Again, I said I went through my own experience of this, and I realized that most flight training and ground training is not tailored to the modern-day student pilot. When I say modern-day student pilot, I should say modern-day part-time student pilot, because let's face it, there's a very small percentage of us that can go and dedicate 24/7, 365 to our flight training, or not even miss a beat and be able to pay for flight training without working. So most of us have a full-time job or maybe a part-time job. We have kids, we have family, we have school. We have all these other responsibilities on top of flight training. And most of these flight trainings and ground trainings are not tailored towards you. And so how is it the part-time pilot tailors to the modern-day student pilot? Well, the first way we do that is by keeping ground school interesting. You want to avoid being boring, you want to avoid that burnout. So how we do that is we present our material in multiple ways, and you're actually listening to one of them right now. You can consume our content via this podcast and an audio recording. You can do this while you're running, while you're driving in traffic, again, tailoring to that busy part-time student pilot. Or you can read through our written lessons. You know, I like to read, so for those of you that like to read, you can read through the lessons. You can see the step-by-step examples and the procedures that we have. Or you can look through our study guide and see our diagrams and mnemonic devices, have that visual cue, those visual cues and aids that help further your understanding. Or you can watch our videos. Or you can take our quizzes and practice tests to reinforce what you just learned. And then finally, you can join us live weekly for our live Q&A and our live lessons, so you can see in real time these things taught out and these examples done in real time. And then finally, you can utilize our group community to form study groups, get questions answered 24/7. All of this is tailored for the modern day student pilot to keep ground school interesting, keep it from being boring, keep from having that burnout, and to find ways that you can consume the content throughout your busy schedule. And guess what? It works. We've had over 350 student pilots come through, take and pass their FAA exams without a single student failing. That's right,
A single student has yet to tell me that they failed either their FAA written or their FAA check ride. So that is just proof in the pudding right there that our concepts, the way we explain things in plain written English, and the way we give you multiple ways to consume this content is working. So if this sounds like something you might be interested in and you want to come join us, we'd love to have you. Just go to www.parttimepilot.com, click on Online Ground School, and we'll see you inside the Online Ground School. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you guys next week.